So last Sunday, I was the lucky one. I got to go downstairs and be with the kids during kids' church, and it was so much fun. Oh, I kind of miss being with the kids. Tracy asked me to come down and to talk to the kids about what ministers do, and about baptism and confirmation, in case any of them are interested in that or curious about it. And so I did that. I tried to do it in a way that might be engaging for the kids. I so far succeeded. At one point, Noah said to me, "Diane, we've been sitting here for nearly an hour." My bad. I did get one of the kids to try on my elf. She got to practice being a minister, and you may have noticed I'm not very tall, so it actually fit her. We practiced serving communion together, and you're going to see the fruit of some of that a little bit later. And they got a close-up view of the baptismal font, water and all. There may have been a bit of a method in my madness in that one, in case any of them were curious about being baptized. Shauna, you may have heard about it. My visit to them is part of an ongoing program that Tracy and Carol are running that they call Service Sundays. And what happens is one Sunday every month or two, they invite someone who serves in the church in some way down to visit with the kids and to talk to the kids about what they do in the course of that service. It's a really wonderful program, and it does two really important things. First of all, obviously, it teaches the kids about our congregational life together, and it gives them some idea of how many people it actually takes to keep things going around here. And that's a good thing for them to know. It also gives those of us who visit the kids a great opportunity to get to know them in kind of a fun way. So the kids get to connect with their church beyond their regular Sunday morning activities. And that's a really, really good thing, because it's actually vitally important that our children have a chance to develop relationships with their broader church family. You might be surprised to know, but there is extensive research that has shown that children who have relationships with five people, apart from their parents and their pastors and teachers, five people in their church family, those kids are far more likely to hold on to their Christian faith as adults than children who don't. It makes a big difference. I really can't say this clearly enough. This research proves that your connections with our youngest really, really matter a lot. And that's why it's so great that Tracy and Carol work so hard to find opportunities for us to be able to be together with the kids, to connect with them in really natural, sort of non-awkward ways. It's a brilliant program, because it turns out that knowing them actually will help this faith that we share to take root in them and to live. And I feel fairly safe in saying that that is something we all hope and pray for them, isn't it? That it will take root. Seeing these kids embrace the faith, it gives us such hope, doesn't it? And hope's not just nice to have, it's essential. Perhaps never more so than when we're facing uncertain times, which is exactly what was going on and how people were feeling at the time when Paul wrote this letter we've heard the opening of to his young protege, Timothy. People were anxious, afraid, worried about what was coming next, worried about the future of the faith and the future of the church. Most scholars agree that this was probably the last of Paul's letters, and that he likely wrote it not very long before he was killed for his faith in Christ. We think he was in prison in Rome when he wrote it, that he had probably gone through one trial and was waiting for a second, in which there was a good likelihood that he was going to be sentenced to death. So for that, and for other reasons, Christians in Rome were growing increasingly nervous. The Roman Emperor Nero had this growing thing for killing Christians, so they were under intense persecution. And fear about that was actually spreading beyond Rome throughout the Roman Empire. It was feeling among the Christian communities like no one was safe. Well, Paul writes to Timothy, who's in Ephesus pastoring the church there. And it seems that things were getting rough for Timothy and for the Ephesians as well on a number of fronts. They'd had some struggles with some false teachers who had been sharing things with people that had actually led some astray. It had gotten bad enough that Paul had actually excommunicated two of those teachers from the community, a very rare thing to have happen. The news of Paul's imprisonment was of grave concern to the people in Ephesus. They loved him. He'd been their pastor for 3 years. Nero's persecution of Christians meant that everyone felt like they were in danger. And to top it all off, despite everyone's expectations, Jesus hadn't returned yet. All of that created this environment where it was all too easy to start to doubt. People were growing discouraged and fearful, and they were becoming way less determined to continue in this way of following Jesus in the face of what felt like growing challenges. Some were even beginning to question the truth of the gospel. Was it real? Did it really all happen? Well, all of that pressure was taking a toll. And so Paul writes to Timothy, and he urges him not to be timid or ashamed of the gospel, but rather to lean into the power and the love and the self-discipline that the Spirit of God can give us. Now, many of Paul's other letters, we know, were written to congregations, to church communities. But this one's different. This is his most personal letter. It really was written to Timothy. He's writing to this young man who he's discipled, he taught, he nurtured, a man who had become like a son to him. In that bit that we heard in verse 6, where he talks about the gift that is in Timothy through the laying on of my hands, that tells us that we think that Paul actually ordained Timothy. And I can tell you, as someone who's fairly newly ordained, that the people who lay hands on you in that process are people with whom you have a very special bond. Paul and Timothy are close. And so Paul writes to ask Timothy to leave the church in Ephesus in the hands of good and capable leaders and to come to be with him in Rome. Paul's feeling alone. He knows that with the next trial, he may be executed. Or he could be released. Who could tell with somebody as volatile as Nero? Which is exhausting, right? So he wants this young man, who is really a son in the faith to him, to come, to be with him. It seems that even the Apostle Paul needed the support of good friends. Now, while Paul wrote primarily to get Timothy to come to Rome, he's Paul, so he says a bunch of other stuff in the letter as well. And that's really where we can find messages for us today and for the church actually throughout time. Paul encourages those in Ephesus and Timothy to endure in the face of their struggles. See, it seems in Ephesus, some people have started to betray Paul. They've questioned his apostolic authority. And they've started to betray Jesus worse. They've abandoned the teachings that Paul had left them with. So he urges Timothy to remain loyal to the message of the gospel and to encourage and entrust others who have remained loyal to lead the church in the future. He could have as easily written these words to us here today. Stay true to the message and the mission of Christ. Don't bail on it. Don't compromise. And entrust it to those who are coming after you. That's the heart of what we need to remember, especially when things get rough. Well, it's striking to me that as he sits in prison, uncertain of what the next day might bring, Paul's mind is drawn back, beyond himself, beyond his present situation and troubles, to the people who've gone before him. He starts by remembering his own family. I'm grateful to God, whom I worship with a clear conscience, as my ancestors did. And then as his thoughts and his thanksgivings turn to Timothy, he remembers Timothy's own lineage of faith too. He reminds Timothy of his grandmother's faith and his mother's faith and the legacy that they have given to him. As Paul's thinking about how to endure in the midst of these trials and how to encourage Timothy to endure, he seems to draw strength by remembering that he is just one link in a much longer chain of people, people who have lived and passed the faith on. And you know what? I don't know about you, but for me, there is strength in remembering this. We're never alone in our faith, despite how it can sometimes feel. We do stand on the shoulders of those who have gone before us, right back to the time of Jesus. And remembering that, it gives us a sense of roots. And those roots can really sustain us and support us. It also makes us realize how critical it is that we act as those same roots for the ones who are coming after us. We look at these kids that we have with us on a Sunday morning, and they do give us hope, for sure. Hope that the church will continue, that the faith will live on, that the love of God will be made manifest in and through their lives. But to just look to them for hope without also recognizing our responsibility, it would not only be selfish, it would be tragic. Because we do have a responsibility to them. As Paul equipped Timothy, and was urging Timothy to equip those who would take over for him in Ephesus, we need to equip our young people, the ones who are following us, so that they have what they need to face the times of uncertainty that will inevitably come for them. Paul's really clear about what it is that gives us this ability to carry on, to face the challenges that come. Remember, he's facing death for his faith in Christ. And yet throughout this letter, written as he sits in a shadow of such suffering, he seems to be so assured that it's all not going to be in vain. The song Scars was perfect for today. It really was. Because we hear in it the same thing we hear in Paul. We hear this note of confidence. He doesn't doubt Jesus' promises, especially the promise that Jesus is going to return and set things right. He doesn't succumb to the temptation to give up. He stands firm for Jesus, confident, and even as we hear over and over in his writings, rejoicing in his suffering. So what is it that gives him that strength, that assurance? Well, as if he doesn't want us to risk missing it, Paul tells us right at the beginning of the letter. It's in the opening salutation, right there. He begins, as was the custom in ancient letter writing, by introducing himself, Paul, an apostle of Christ. But then he adds another bit. In this letter, it's the only place we see him add these words. It's a phrase that quite simply states the reason for everything he does. He says, for the sake of the promise of life that is in Christ Jesus. Everything Paul is, everything Paul does is for one reason. For the sake of the promise we have in Christ. Friends, that's our promise. As Jesus' people living here today, it's no less our reason for being than it was Paul's. That promise is quite simply about who Jesus is and what Jesus has done and continues to do. Jesus, who is and always has been the very Son of God, who came to live here on this earth in the mess with us to show us how to live and how to love. Jesus, who died on this earth so that we and all creation might one day live forever in the fullness of life God created us for. That's what Jesus has done. That's what Jesus continues to do. That is the heart of every message you hear here on a Sunday morning, because it's our promise. It is the life that God is inviting us all to. And friends, in an age where so much competes for our attention and our loyalty, this is the promise, countercultural as it may be, that we must guard steadfastly and pass on to the ones who are coming after us. We must tell them what Jesus has done and is doing. We must share with them what it's meant for us to live with the good news of that promise in our lives and how it has helped us through hard times. And we must equip them to share that same good news and promise in their very own ways with the ones who come after them. See, our willingness to share ourselves and our stories with our young people in this way, it's critical if they're going to embrace this faith that we share and live their lives as followers of Jesus. Very early on in my own walk with Jesus, I was blessed by several people here in our St. Stephen's Church family. People who were willing to share their stories from their lives of faith with me. Stories of what it had meant for them to know that God was with them. Stories of how God had loved and cared for them. I can remember sitting with these people as part of an alpha group I was in and just longing to hear them start to tell their stories. I know now from conversations I've had with them that they wondered what on earth they could have to say to somebody like me, a much younger, ridiculously curious baby Christian. Well, they had lots to tell me, a lifetime of riches to share, stories of what God has meant to them. And you know what? As much as any theology I learned in school, those stories have been huge for me. They remain huge, as do all of the stories so many of you have so graciously shared. To this day, when you start to tell your stories, I can feel God pouring encouragement and strength into my heart. And so I want to thank you. Thank you for being willing to share your stories. And keep it up. Please, please keep it up. Because it may not seem to you like you're doing much, but you are. You are guarding this gospel we share. And you're teaching us how to guard it too, so that we can pass it on to those kids.